remember, well, when was it? May, April, when we were in Indonesia? We did a few shows from Jakarta for RN Drive, and we did a histrionics from inside a colonial building. It was quite an extraordinary building. And there's just such an amazing history there to be told about the independence of that nation, about its colonial history and how it continues to relate to it, and the figures that were central to that Indonesian independence identity creation. Well, that's kind of where we're going back to today. You're going to meet, via her work, a woman by the name of Raden Ajeng Kartini, who was born in 1879 in the Dutch East Indies, which is now, of course, modern-day Indonesia. She was a tireless advocate for women's education, a pioneer of the Indonesian nationalist movement, but she's kind of become a symbol for, well, so many things, and becomes a really interesting study in the history of that country and, of course, just the nature of people and the way we appropriate symbols. I'm joined by Dr. Joost Kotte, who's a leading researcher on the letters of R.A. Kartini and can take us through some of that history. Thank you very much for joining us, Dr. Kotte.
Hi, Walid. Great to be here.
So interesting that she had such a profound impact. She died at the age of 25, so she's obviously achieved a lot. Tell us about Kartini. Who was she?
Well, she's the daughter of a regent or Bupati of Jepara, one of 11 children born to his two wives. So that's the baseline, if you like. What she's doing, it makes her so significant. So you can really picture her writing to the colonials that you mentioned. And unfortunately, she dies very early, so the career that's anticipated in the letters never actually transpires, unfortunately.
Well, let's go right back to the start then. Her childhood, what was that like?
Well, she's born to a family that already had Western education and was fairly close to the colonials, although, on the other hand, it's a noble Javanese family. So it's really a family that encompasses both Western and Javanese tradition. Her father's fairly progressive and allows his daughter also to get a preliminary Western education. So she follows a primary school. Her brothers, in fact, go to grammar school, and one of them goes to Holland to get a university PhD. So it's it's an interesting modern family. But basically, I think she's an autodidact, so she has a basic primary education, but then she really gets on to reading contemporary Dutch feminist, socialist, and the latest avant-garde literature. So by the time she's 19, she really is up to date in what's happening in the progressive circles in the Netherlands.
Right. So she leaves school at 12. It's the self-teaching. She's an autodidact.
The real education happens after that. Her brother is in a grammar school and brings back books, and they have discussion. And there's a feminist writer who's the wife of the local colonial official who she's always visiting. And I think the real discussions and her facility with Dutch, which is really excellent, happens, if you like, in the living room talking to this wife of the colonial official. Yeah.
Isn't it interesting, though, the way that someone who is living under the colonisation of the Dutch starts to find their way out of it by learning about, imbibing the ideas of, and then embracing the work that is happening within the colonizer's home country. I mean, the Dutch feminism was one of those things that unlocks her mind and lets her write the things she comes to write.
Absolutely. And that's what's so exciting. She reaches actually over that colonial context, and which she criticises, into the progressive circles of the Netherlands. I mean, in 1898, she's participating in the greatest feminist project of the Dutch feminist movement, an exhibition of women's work, and she's there as an equal, saying, look, us Javanese women also work, and take us on board here. And the Dutch feminists are completely bowled over. They're not into Javanese women yet. And she writes to the leader of the Socialist Party in the Dutch parliament, who's the leading colonial reformer. So she's really in contact and carefully chooses who she's writing to, over the top of a fairly redneck colonial regime, which is only beginning to pick up some of that reformist movement that's coming out of the Netherlands.
Right, she's throwing Dutch thought back at the Dutch, which is
absolutely. And that's her agenda, in fact, to educate the Dutch. I mean, many of letters saying, look, you Dutch, just listen to us and I'll tell you what's going on.
But she's writing for a range of different audiences, isn't she? I mean, she writes partly to Dutch women and Dutch feminists, as you say, but she's writing in various publications for various people. How would you describe her impact?
There is a question here. So what we know, what we have known until now about Kartini is the selection of letters that a person, i.e. the director, the retired director of colonial education, has collected together and published. So we don't know everybody that she's writing to, but she's writing to leading Dutch feminists, she's writing to leading Dutch socialists, she's writing to leading colonial liberals who are beginning to talk about colonial reform. And this is all happening at the time when the Dutch are really into, if you like, the white man's burden. And they call it the ethical policy, and saying Christian nation like the Dutch should, in fact, take care of our colonial subjects. And this is just starting to seep into the colonial sort of mindset. And that's what Kartini is hearing and feeding into.
Now, the irony, I suppose, if that's the right word, is that she dies in 1904, and this is a long time before Indonesia actually achieves independence, more than four decades before it does. So then she becomes a different sort of figure, because Indonesia has independence, and she's a figure from the colonial history, but is now speaking posthumously to a free Indonesia. What does she become as a symbol then?
Just to track back just one sec, that she is in fact writing about nationalist issues before the more better known male Indonesians are writing. But you're right, well before the Indonesian nationalist movement, which really gets on the off the ground second decade and certainly by the 20s. Okay, then when Sukarno is constructing the independent Indonesian nation, he digs into the history of the heroes, if you like, and Kartini is pulled out as the key female national hero because of these letters. And then subsequently, in the presidency of Suharto, she becomes a different sort of icon. No longer the nationalist and the challenger of the status quo, but very much she's used very much as the model of the ideal mother and the ideal nurturer. And of course, that's been criticised partly because this is an ideological construct by the Suharto government, because that's the role that he wanted women to play. And also, of course, because that doesn't really represent the Kartini, who is that passionate writer for reform that we can see in her letters.
Yes, the progressive feminism she was talking about probably wouldn't have cast her in that mould. So she becomes kind of a malleable symbol in a way. What is it then that we can glean about Indonesia's social evolution through the manipulation of her as an emblem?
Well, I think a lot has been written about the so-called New Order, the Suharto government, which was very much about, on the one hand, encouraging development and modernisation, but on the other hand, trying to keep whole of tradition. And of course, it's been very much criticised because it becomes very much an economically divisive and military regime. So a lot of negative things have been written about Suharto, but it's also about modernisation, and Kartini was used in that process of selling a new model of Indonesia. But I think now we've got over the new order period, and I think now we've got much more democratic Indonesia, and you can read Kartini now as as a model. I mean, I think it's always a good read as well as anything else. But she clearly comes through now as a person and, if you like, a model for the good citizen who wants reform, who wants to change things that are not appropriate and so on. I mean, Kartini also spoke to international feminists, not just an Indonesian and not just in the colonial context, but she was picked up in the second decade of the 20th century, and there were a couple of feminists in America vying to translate, to be the first translator of Kartini letters, and the first English translation comes out in 1920. Because it's an international figure, and she was talking an international feminist agenda here.
Yes, thank you. It's been so fascinating to take this trip down into the history of colonial Indonesia and then, of course, beyond, which is the nature of these historical figures. I really do appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
It's a pleasure, Waleed. Thanks so much.
Yeah. It's Dr. Jos Kote, who is a leading researcher on the letters of R.A. Kartini. Incidentally, he's edited a book of her complete writings. He's doing a translation. It's out later this month. Our correspondent for Histrionics this week. You're with Waleed Ali on RN Drive, where it's nearly drawing room time.